What is a library audit? And how can law firms save huge sums of money by conducting such an audit? Cookie Lewis, MSLS, is president of Ask Infomania, a legal and business research firm who conducts such audits. As a legal information strategist, she works with law firms to maximize their return on investment in their library resources and other law library management issues. In her interview with Ed, she discusses such audits, why law firms should consider having one, and how law firms can save many dollars of overhead with the right audit results.
Cookie, thanks for joining us today. I'm intrigued by your skill, your expertise, and the topic for today, which is talking about law libraries and something that every lawyer has to have or have access to.
Yes, that's right. And we have to remember in these days, the typical phrase law library doesn't mean just books. It also means a variety of very specialized and online services, online legal databases, as well as business databases, and of course, free sources on the internet.
Well, we're talking today about libraries as though it's something more than the books that I grew up with. Obviously, we have all the things that you've mentioned produced by a number of folks, including West and Lexis and the like. But some people, lawyers, do not really understand what should be in their library. And I know one of the things that you do is to go into law firms and conduct what you call a library audit. What is that?
Well, a library audit is a number of things. Usually the primary focus of a library audit is to help law firms reduce duplication of the same information, thus reducing their overhead for their information resources to practice law. Lawyers typically purchase too much of the same thing in the mediums that I just spoke of. There is usually duplication of free sources on the internet, their online contracts, and their print materials. And in this economy, lawyers are especially interested in reducing their overhead expenses.
So are you saying that they can get much of what they have in their library free off of the internet today?
They can get a lot, not necessarily all. It's a balancing act, and that's what I specialize in trying to rebalance their expenses and the coverage of what they need to still practice good law.
Well, of course, the more that a lawyer can reduce what he has in his library physically and work with online tools, the more he can save or she can save vis-a-vis the cost of real estate. And I would imagine that that's a big element today.
Yes, it is. You know, one of the benefits of a law library audit is the reduction of what we might call dead real estate. Think if you could reduce your physical library holdings 25%, 50%, and turn that space into an associate or paralegal's office that bills for their time. That really adds to the bottom line for the partners at the end of the year.
Well, when is the best time for a lawyer to do this audit?
The best time for a lawyer or a law firm to do these audits is, one, the most obvious is if they're going to move to new space. Two, the next obvious is 3 to 6 months before their Lexis, Westlaw, let's say, CCH, BNA contracts are up for renewal. And one of the things that people ask is, well, why do you need so much time to do this? And it's sort of a complicated procedure because, one, you want to quantify your facts so you can make strong business-driven decisions based on statistics, not gut feelings. And so usually when I do an audit for a firm, I am doing a series of surveys on a variety of things. One of the things I'm most interested in to help attorneys potentially reduce their physical library spaces. I want to know, how are attorneys doing their research? So I ask a series of questions. When you need to look up judges' rulings, are you going online? Are you going into judicial profiles? When you want to do this, do you go here? Do you go there? And in the last 3 years, it is amazing how many people are going to the Internet first before they will then go on to their Lexis or Westlaw contracts or to the books. So we want to quantify those things to see what will be the best mix for that particular firm's attorneys. We also are seeking information from our vendors who hold our contracts. I ask for vendor reports for business usage. So I want to know, let's say on my Lexis or Westlaw bill, I want to know how many searches we're doing, how many shepherdizing we're doing, what are the largest files where we're spending the most money, what type of, how are we going outside of our contract, what might we want to look at in terms of breakout by attorneys. And so this will also help determine what is needed and what is not for a future contract.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work to get that kind of information, and I would imagine that the larger the law firm, that is, the larger the number of lawyers in a firm, the more difficult it is to get that information, and, of course, the more time-consuming it is, and, of course, then the more expensive it is. And I'm just wondering what kind of cost-benefit arrangements you produce when you get all that information before you first then make recommendations for them to make alterations?
Well, first of all of this information the vendors already have. Believe me, they're tracking what their customers are using and what they're not using. So they're doing all the work up front, putting together these reports for me. I do spend the time analyzing their reports. And then after I get their reports and the survey, and we, you know, use tools such as Zoomerang for the survey. So, again, automation is great. I'm not wasting, or I shouldn't say wasting, but using my time to compile a survey statistics. It's all being done through Zoomerang or some other, I use Zoomerang, but there's other survey software. So, basically, my time is for the analysis and recommendations. And then, of course, why you need time is you want to do competitive bidding between vendors to get the best deals and recommendations for your client. The cost benefit of this, and of course, again, it depends on the size of the law firm and its holdings, and each law firm is unique. Most library audits done by professionals are for firms that I would say are 20 attorneys and above to make them cost effective. So, for example, I worked on an audit for a 30-person firm and helped them just do their online databases, and I was able, for a $7,000 fee, to reduce their online contract by $200,000 over the next 3 years. So I think that's a pretty good return on investment ratio. Another larger firm, a national law firm that I did an audit for, I made recommendations to save them $800,000 a year, and I was not included in the end results. I would say that audit cost probably close to $20,000, but I can assure you they also got very good return on investment, but I couldn't actually quote you a figure on that.
Well, Cookie, it seems to me that from what you're saying, law firms are spending a lot of money on their contracts, with West and with Lexis and perhaps with others, that they're really not using, that they're really not taking advantage of. I mean, if you can cause a reduction in of that magnitude, is it true that, A, they're not using all that information that's available, and B, perhaps some of that information is available for free elsewhere?
It's absolutely true. First of all, in my experience of doing a multitude of audits, law firms typically purchase too much on their with their online contracts. Now, this is not totally their fault. I have to honestly tell you that the vendors make the selections very difficult for a firm that's not in the know how to construct their contracts properly. And many firms do not know that you can always do a custom contract, especially these days. The vendors are very afraid of the Internet and the great migration to the Internet, and so they are usually much easier to deal with now doing a customized contract than they were, let's say, 3 years ago.
Well, are you saying that there's a standard contract, quote unquote,
yes,
that they are giving to law firms, perhaps depending on the size of the law firm, and saying take it or leave it?
They used to do that. They absolutely used to do that. And now the tables have turned, and the law firms are now saying, look, this is what we want. This is what we use. You can see the statistics. We will not pay for what we do not use. And if you're not interested in our business, we'll go to your competitor. And they are fighting for market share. And if you have somebody in the know that's negotiating the contract and who knows these things and will hang tough, you will get a better deal. Also, the discounts that are offered on the online contracts, that also, can be negotiated as well. And I think a lot of smaller firms that don't have law librarians, that don't have legal administrators that know these things, or partners, that they're sort of left in the dark and they don't get the best deals that they could be getting.
Well, who typically does the negotiation on these contracts with these large companies from the law firm's perspective?
There's different. Usually, if a law firm has a law librarian, the law librarian is the one that would be doing this type of work.
And from the perspective of the vendors, I mean, I know two vendors. I don't know how many more vendors we would be talking about. But from the vendor side, who would be doing the negotiation? A typical salesperson?
No. They have specialists that specialize in this. It's usually the salesperson that has the everyday contact with the law firm, with one of their, what would I call them, depending, again, on the size of the firm, a specialized person, usually a little higher up, that negotiates. Now, some firms, the law librarian will prepare all this, present it to the management committee, and sometimes the librarian with, let's say, the CFO or a managing partner will negotiate in this way. And other times, firms that don't have librarians, people like myself, there are professionals like myself. I am a law librarian and have been for 30 years. We do this type of work for firms that do not have an in-house law librarian. There are companies that specialize in national firms, and Chase Management is one, for example. I am somebody else who is another one. There's several other law librarians nationally that do this type of work to help law firms.
Okay, now, once the contract has changed and we're now in a supposedly new environment as far,
yes,
as the library is concerned, is there a need to let the attorneys and paralegals know about the changes, or because the changes reflect what their previous actual habits were, they would just automatically know that the changes are made.
No, this is the biggest failure of law firms with their library audits. The changes have to be communicated on many different levels to different people. If you think about the people that use the library and the online services, you know, it's in a law firm, and again, depending on the size, it's not just the attorneys. As you said, it's the paralegals. It can be a marketing department if a law firm has that. It could even be the administration, the CFO or the executive director of the law firm that's using business things. So the changes have to be communicated to the different parties in the law firm. I believe old habits die very hard, and what's the most important is training on these new changes. The written communication, the follow-through training, if a firm has its own intranet, library intranet, that has to be communicated. And I think firms need to be open about the changes, not only the new content, but current policies that may change from the changes, such as for billable or non-billable research. All of these things need to be conveyed, and there needs to be constant reminders.
Well, I guess I'm not quite understanding. If somebody is using a certain volume, let's say it's a tax code volume,
yes,
and the new change hasn't impacted that, how is the lawyer going to know that there's been a change, or what difference does it make to the lawyer if there was a change but he can still get to the tax code that he wants?
Well, I think I was mainly referring to online content. I think what people don't realize is that most of the work being done in the law firms is online, either from the internet or from, let's say, the tax code, or let's say...
Well, let's use the tax code for a moment, but the lawyer is looking at the tax code online as opposed to the tax code hard copy. So if no change has been made, is the lawyer going to notice a difference?
Not sure.
Let me
think. You could say, but instead of looking at the tax code in the library where there's always changes and you're paying for supplements, I might want to put on the firm's intranet or let them know that there is a free site to bookmark that they can pull up the tax code on a daily basis with any changes. And that way, if you're doing work for a client, that's not incurring an online charge to the client, and you could probably do the work quicker.
Okay, so in other words, if there's no change to the resource that the lawyer has been using, then the lawyer's likely not to know that there was a change made of some kind impacting other parts of the contract. But if there was a change, or if something else were available that would be less expensive for the firm, then those changes need to be communicated to the lawyers.
Absolutely.
And what you're suggesting, I think, is quite appropriate in that a training program on how to use the internet, how to use the library using the internet, is very, very helpful and cost effective.
I think so, and I think also putting information and doing an intranet on a special section, if the firm has an intranet on the library, or if there's already a library site, to say, to list, let's say, in different practice areas, all the free sites with maybe a policy, do this first before going online.
Okay, let me ask you the last question for today, and that is sort of a simplistic question after our conversation thus far, and that is, why can't a law firm just call their vendor representative to help them go through the subscriptions and make the changes in terms that would be appropriate to help the firm with their online contracts?
Well, that's sort of a loaded question. First of all, you know, I think both the law firm and the vendor have different business agendas.
So you're suggesting that it's the fox and the chicken coop?
It sort of is. I'm not, you know, I think that you're going to get more for your money from your librarian or from people who really know the ins and outs. I mean, to me, there's an inherent conflict of interest. Now, I do think that the vendors, I mean, I can certainly say that my vendors, in terms of going through some of the print subscriptions and learning about their offers and other types of things, has always been helpful, and that they do want their customers to stay happy so that you will want to do business with them. But when I think what people don't realize, the majority of a law firm's expenditures on library is online. It's not the books anymore. You know, these Lexis and Westlaw and Commerce Clearinghouse and other, you know, Bureau of National Affairs databases, this is the bulk of a firm's library budget in terms of material.
Well, Cookie, you know, I've known you for many years, and I know that your focus in this area has always produced great results for lawyers who have used your services, and I want to thank you for joining us today and giving us a glimpse into a world that most lawyers really don't pay much attention to. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.